to the fourth case, Woods versus Department of Children and Family Services. Ms. Bruce?
Your Honors, may it please the Court, Harless Woods' Section 1983 claim, which is premised on childhood sexual abuse, demonstrates the application of an important exception to the rule established by the Supreme Court in Owens versus Acure. Although that case held that a state's general or residual personal injury statute of limitations should apply to all Section 1983 claims, the Court acknowledged that it had not had the opportunity in that case to determine whether application of that rule complied with federal interests as mandated by Section 1988. The Owens Court cited Justice Rehnquist's concurrence in Burnett v. Groton, where he stated that a statute of limitations does not comply with federal interests if it does not give claimants a reasonable time to bring suit. Justice Rehnquist continued that what constitutes a reasonable time cannot be determined a priori. Accordingly, we ask this Court today to reverse the District Court's dismissal of Woods' Section 1983 claim as untimely because the District Court should have applied Illinois' 20-year statute of limitations, which is applicable to victims of childhood sexual abuse.
Was there an Illinois case pending or filed?
I'm sorry?
Illinois under state law case?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Well, you'd be aware of it, I think, if it were. So there was no state claim filed within whatever statute of limitations would be in Illinois.
Correct.
Okay.
But to address that point, and the appellees have certainly raised it, that Woods may still avail himself of state law remedies. The Supreme Court, however, has made clear that the existence of a state remedy is not enough to foreclose the possibility of bringing a Section 1983 claim. In Wilson, the Court wrote that Congress intended Section 1983 to be enforceable whether or not a parallel state law claim exists. And indeed, the entire premise of the Wilson-Owen line of cases is that Section 1983 claims have no analog. We're asking this Court to apply today just the very narrow exception outlined in Section 1988 and recognized by the Supreme Court in Owens. And this is so because Section 1988 requires an analysis of federal interest in this case. For civil rights claims, Section 1988 allows the Court to borrow a state's statute of limitations only so far as the same is not inconsistent with the Constitution and laws of the United States. Here, application of Illinois' general two-year statute of limitations to Woods' claim is inconsistent with the premises of deterrence and compensation because application of that statute does not afford Woods sufficient time to bring his claim premised on childhood sexual abuse. Although Owens and Wilson emphasized federal interests of uniformity, certainty, and the minimization of unnecessary litigation, there is no reason why those interests should trump deterrence and compensation, which are the chief goals of Section 1983. Indeed, Owens footnote 13 implicitly recognized that other interests may override uniformity.
He was 21 when he realized the situation, is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Was there any
effort to go forward with something at that point, even in the federal? Or was there any, I don't know who was representing him then or what, but did he do anything within that two-year period that he might have been able to file a federal suit?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. We were appointed counsel.
I understand. I'm just looking, right, trying to examine what he could have or should have done as opposed to what he's trying to do now.
Right. There's nothing that I'm aware of that he did in that two-year time frame between 2004 and 2006 to bring a claim.
Now, we've got pretty strong precedent about the 2 years and how we came up with it, so you'd have to override that somehow. I say you talked about narrow exceptions and that sort of thing, I guess.
I agree. Based on our review of this Court's precedent, however, this Court has never had the opportunity to apply Section 1988's consistency language with a claim premised on childhood sexual abuse.
Okay.
And indeed, we submit today that if Woods' claim cannot fit into that exception articulated in Section 1988, then that language is effectively rendered meaningless. And this is so because 2 years is simply not enough time to serve those federal interests of deterrence and compensation, given the extreme social and psychological barriers faced by childhood sexual abuse victims when they're bringing claims. This court in Doe versus United States noted that the nation's courts are unfortunately awash with childhood sexual abuse litigation, and also noted that detecting abuse and convicting perpetrators is problematic because of the typical reluctance or even inability of the young victims to come forward against their perpetrators. Since Doe was written in 1993, society's understanding of the barriers faced by childhood sexual abuse victims has continued to expand.
Isn't there some consideration to be given in this analysis of the rights of the accused? That is, with regard to testimony, if you extend it out to the length that you're requesting, memories fade. There are other things that happen with regard to it.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's why we advocate application of Illinois' 20-year childhood sexual abuse statute, because Illinois' legislature has had the opportunity to balance those interests of repose against the interests of victims in bringing their claims, and has determined that 20 years is the grounds in which both interests are served. Social commentators, the case law, and legislative bodies have recognized, like Illinois has, that victims face a fear of publicity, of shame, and even guilt when coming forward against their abusers. Moreover, this particular crime has the unfortunate result of actually binding the victim closer to the perpetrator. This leads to a lifetime not only of confusion and mistrust, but it makes it even more difficult.
Ms. Brewster, you say that the claim here is based on the federal interest of preventing or protecting from child abuse, but isn't the claim really based on the process of placement here? The claim is not directly about the abuse. It's about the failure to recognize that the abuse was likely to happen in that environment, and the harm in placing the plaintiff in that environment.
Correct.
That seems
true.
Like a little different interest to me, a more of a process interest than the abuse.
I think you're correct that the issue isn't – Woods hasn't brought suit against the
perpetrator.
Actual perpetrators,
right.
Here. He claims he was abused by another 13-year-old child. Right. And so the issue is that there were a variety of actors that did nothing to stop him and prevent the abuse, and they were in charge of his care.
All right. Thank you.
I see I've entered my time for rebuttal, so unless there are any other...
Go into it or not, it's up to you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Mary Welsh. I'm here on behalf of the Department of Children and Family Services, and I'm sharing the time with the attorney for Lutheran Services, Mr. Kalaje. I think the plaintiff has overread the footnote that he relies on in Owens. It's footnote 13, and what it said was, relying on Justice Rehnquist's concurrence, you know, in a now, you know, overruled decision, overruled by Owens, Wilson probably, and then Owens. And so what it says is, the footnote 13 says, we don't have to worry about an inconsistency with a one-year statute of limitations, because we're choosing the third year, a three-year statute of limitations that was at issue in Owens, which tells us that the Supreme Court was fully aware that, because of the other footnote 8, which lists, you know, numerous state statutes from all the different statutes, including child sexual abuse statutes of limitations. So it's aware that its decision would apply to childhood sexual abuse cases, constitutional cases that arise from childhood sexual abuse, and it impliedly says that 3 years is enough. A three-year statute of limitations that was at issue in Owens is sufficient to be consistent with federal interests with regard to the remedial and enforcement aspects of Section 1983. And there's really no principal difference, the plaintiff certainly doesn't make any, between 3 years and 2 years in this regard. Now, in addition, I would like to focus on the problems which the court has mentioned about the fact that there are, Section 1983 claims are brought against government defendants, generally employees, and generally, as the court noted, these are failure to protect cases. In all the cases that all the parties cite, there are very few defendants who are the actual abusers. Generally, it's a school district. Here, it's DCFS or a social services organization, and so on. So these are cases brought for constitutional violations with an underlying child sexual abuse component against government workers. And remember, Wilson says that any distance of time for enforcing these rights is utterly repugnant to the federal interest. So what plaintiff is suggesting is that not just in Illinois, where there's currently a 20-year statute of limitations, and 20-year limitations period, and in other states it's unlimited, so that the federal interest in prompt adjudication of these federal constitutional claims will be utterly denied, utterly frustrated by using a particularized statute of limitations for constitutional claims that just happen to be related to childhood sexual abuse. This is
some of the things that are going on even within the church discovery, where there's been the priest or preacher or whatever abuse goes back even more than 20 years in some cases.
Well, certainly. I mean, I'm not saying that the states are making...
I'm just pointing out what you're saying is this could be way up there.
Yes, that's precisely what I'm saying. It's unlimited.
Their grandkids are working there.
This is precisely true. And in fact, in Illinois, recently there was introduced a bill to extend it to have these claims brought at any time. So it wouldn't be just 20 years. It would be at any time. And so, again, the court has to think about whether this is consistent with federal interests. And we know from Wilson and Owens that this is completely inconsistent with federal interests. And also, this would require the court to engage in additional needless collateral litigation. Does this period apply to non-abusers? Illinois courts have grappled with this question. Is this really an accrual statute? Because it talks about discovery of an injury. And if it's an accrual, then it doesn't apply. Because federal accrual rights apply, and so on. So, and also, is this a statute of repose, which is not a statute of limitations? All of these questions would come up, causing a great deal of unnecessary litigation when Owens and Wilson are very clear there's one statute of limitations for everybody, so that both the plaintiffs and the defendants are aware of the period within which this must, a constitutional claim must be brought. And that, every single case other than Cosgrove, which is an outlier, that Tenth Circuit unpublished decision that plaintiff relies on, Cosgrove as an outlier says there wasn't even a defendant that was represented in Cosgrove. So we don't even know what would happen later on when a defendant did in fact raise the kind of defense we're raising here. I'm sorry?
There's no authority anyway.
Well, exactly. And it didn't even mention Blake, its own precedent. I mean, it's unconceivable. Anyway, I don't want to eat into my co-counsel's time. Unless there's particular interest in me, I just want to say one last thing. The plaintiff's concerns about repressed memory are taken care of by the federal accrual standards, and the tolling provisions for the state take care of everything else. Thank you. We ask the court to affirm.
It pleases the court, Stephen Coloje for Defendant Lutheran Child and Family Services of Illinois. At page 14 of his reply brief, the plaintiff states, courts do not create and apply individual or different statutes of limitations to claimants based on individual circumstances. That's exactly what the plaintiff is asking this court to do here, however. We're doing in this case exactly what Wilson and Owens said that we should not do, which is litigate a collateral matter of which statute of limitations should apply to a particular Section 1983 claim. Wilson and Owens undertook that analysis. They examined the federal interests underlying Section 1983 and 1988, and the Supreme Court decided that those interests are best served by applying the state statute for personal injuries to every case, regardless of individual circumstances. Specifically with respect to this important exception that plaintiff keeps referencing, the only important exception the plaintiff is urging here is one that would apply to his particular case and every other plaintiff who had a Section 1983 claim premised on similar facts. But the fact of the matter is Wilson and Owens foreclose any analogizing to state tort claims, which is what the plaintiff is doing here. The plaintiff apparently has no problem with any other kind of Section 1983 claim being bound by a two-year statute of limitations. And the very footnote and concurring opinion of Justice Rehnquist that plaintiff cites actually undermines his own argument. The penultimate paragraph of Justice Rehnquist's concurrence in Burnett said that Justice Rehnquist said, I do not believe the practicalities of litigation necessarily mean that a six-month limitations period is an unreasonable time in which to bring a federal cause of action. So notwithstanding the fact that Burnett has been essentially abrogated by the court that wrote the opinion, Justice Rehnquist's own concurrence on which the plaintiff relies undermines their own argument. I'd like to talk briefly about the evidentiary hearing the plaintiff claims should have been granted him. As Judge Castillo noted, there are no facts in dispute in this case. The affirmative defense of statute of limitations was raised.
Was this decided on a 12B6 basis or a 12C basis or what basis?
Initially, the judge ruled sua sponte.
Sua sponte, he dismissed it.
Correct.
And then allowed an amendment.
An amendment, and then the plaintiff opted to file a motion to reconsider and stand on the original complaint.
So the sua sponte dismissal, was that a 12B6 dismissal? Or?
The order doesn't specify. It was either pursuant to 12B6 or 12C. I think it had to be one of the two procedurally.
An answer would have to be filed to reach it on 12C. Is that right?
That's probably correct, Your Honor. But in any event, I subsequently filed a 12B6 motion myself. As a practical matter, and that was because it was pre-answer, but it doesn't really make a practical difference procedurally because the case law supports an entry of a dismissal on statute of limitations under either rule, 12B6 or 12C. As I said, the plaintiff did not file an amended complaint. There was no state law cause of action added to the case, which could have been done. There was no state law proceeding filed in state court. And there were no facts alleged. First of all, the judge allowed the plaintiff, if he could, to plead equitable tolling, equitable estoppel, if those were viable theories. They obviously weren't. They weren't pled. Nor are any facts pled in the complaint that would support application of those theories. In fact, there is no explanation anywhere in either the complaint, the motion to reconsider, the briefs to this court, no explanation given as to why the plaintiff waited 7 years after he admittedly discovered his cause of action to file suit. No explanation why he couldn't have filed within the 2 years. So given all of these facts, there is no recourse for this court. We are all bound by Wilson and Owens and what they instruct us to do, which is apply 2-year statute to every Section 1983 claim. That's what the judge did here. He was correct in doing so. That's what this court has consistently done following Wilson and Owens, and there is no precedent to support the important exception that plaintiff would have this court create, notwithstanding the holdings that the Supreme Court has given us. I ask the court to affirm the judge's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 2 minutes.
And Ms. Brewster, I'm sorry to cut into your time, but you don't have a dispute with the procedural posture here, as I understand it. You go right to the merits of the statute of limitations ruling. You don't care that it was done on a sua sponte dismissal?
Correct. Our assertion with regards to the evidentiary hearing is really that if this court and really the district court felt that it couldn't find that federal interests of deterrence and compensation should apply here such that Section 1988's language mandates the application of a different statute of limitations, then there should have been some sort of evidentiary hearing because the issue isn't really Woods's particular facts. The issue is the barriers faced by childhood sexual abuse victims as a whole and the fact that society has now recognized since Owens was decided in 1989 that that those barriers do exist and that they prevent claims from coming forward for decades at a time.
But at such a hearing, your burden would not be focused on victims of child abuse, though it would be all 1983 litigants, wouldn't it, whether 2 years is an insufficient period of time for them to bring 1983 actions?
No, Your Honor.
It would be limited to child abuse victims?
Correct, committed under color of law. And also, to be clear, we're not asking this court to return to a Burnett-era approach, and our argument is not based entirely on the footnote 13 of the Owens decision. It's based on the language of Section 1988. And just as this court is bound by Owens and by Wilson, it's bound to apply that language. Additionally, the appellees don't contest that these barriers exist that prevent childhood sexual abuse victims from coming forward for decades. Instead, they raise a floodgates argument. And we submit that if there really is a risk of increased litigation in allowing childhood sexual abuse victims where that abuse is committed under the color of law, I see my time has expired. If I can just briefly conclude, we just submit that if that is the greatest risk in giving these victims the time they deserve pursuant to Section 1988, it's a risk that society should be willing to take.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to all counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.